It is a thrill and a great honor to begin a new Zman together. I look around, I see Baruch Hashem, so many new faces, returning friends, and this Chevra Bli Ayin Hara continues to grow. And I just want to begin with a word of Hakaras HaTov to each of you for coming and joining. It's something that I look forward to mamash the whole week, and I spent time preparing because I appreciate what it means to give up the beginning of your Sunday morning when you could be out in, I don't know. I was going to say, you could be running a marathon in the pouring rain this morning.
Watching soccer in the rain.
That's right.
Taking down the sukkah.
Or taking down the sukkah also in the rain. But the truth is, the fact that you choose to come and spend the morning together to start our week with Talmud Torah means a great deal to me, and I appreciate it so much, and I thank you all for coming, and I look forward to Mirtz Hashem, everybody in good health, to another year of learning together.
Amen.
A word about our series for this season. We're calling it Gateways to the Greats, and we're going to be spending the year studying together introductions to books. And the reason why I chose this for the series for this year is, first of all, of course, because many Sfarim, oftentimes the content of those Sfarim, the primary sources of those study, are difficult to parse, or even if they're easy, the introductions are overlooked. And oftentimes there is a rich content in the introduction to a Sefer, which tells you a lot about what the Sefer is going to be, but more than that, it tells you something often independent of what the Sefer is about, as we'll see during the year. But the other reason that I really wanted to choose this topic is it actually somewhat follows the topic that we tackled last year. Last year, we spent the whole year thinking about Masorah and the tradition. Because to me, Masorah is so important in my identity as a living, breathing Torah Jew. You know, today we live in complicated and tumultuous and confusing times. So different people grasp onto different things to hold when the wind blows really hard. And to me, the ability to hold on to great people gives me a great source of strength. And I find that when we can appreciate the Masorah, we can hold on and become stronger in our appreciation, our connection to Yiddishkeit. So to me, by studying Hakdamas, what we actually do is open a new window into the world of learning and that world of tradition. Because oftentimes, a book on a shelf, it's just that, it's a book on a shelf. But really, it's so much more. It's the whole life of a person and their experience and when they lived and what they left as a legacy for us to study. And when you study the introduction to Hakdama, you get the picture of that and you can grasp onto it. At least for me, that's the experience. And my goal is hopefully to be able to transmit some of that and to share that with you so that you'll feel the same way, that when you see, even if you just see a Sefer, you'll recognize the tremendous wellspring of energy, of spiritual energy and history that goes into this volume and how that connects us on a daily basis to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the goal of this series. It's not an academic survey of Jewish books. It is a portal into great Sfarim and great people's lives that can raise us up as we become attached to that. There is a phrase, some of you are familiar, Masa yagiu masai lamasai avosai. When will my actions, my ma'asim, yagiu, they will reach the actions of my forefathers? So some Mefarshim say it doesn't mean yagiu as in we'll grasp, like reach at the same level, but masa yagiu, like we'll touch. When can I even touch the feet of the great people who came before me? So thinking about the great Sfarim, maybe we'll never reach the level, maybe some people here will, but maybe I'll never reach the level of some of the authors of these Sfarim. But by experiencing them, I can just touch the bottom of that greatness and become great through that. And that's why we're calling it Gateways to the Greats. And just in that vein, I'll mention yesterday was the 27th of Tishrei, was the passing, the art site of my grandfather, Zichrono Livracha, who had a big impact on my life, Reb Chaim Baruch ben Harav Elimelech. It was also the art site of his father, Reb Elimelech Kovalenko, Zichrono Livracha. And so the idea of Yagiu Masai L'Masai Avosa, the people who came before us, is something that's very much with us. So where are we going to start? So where do you begin? So one thing that I did was I sat down over the summer and I made myself a spreadsheet. a spreadsheet of a variety of different svarim and different introductions that, in my experience or based on recommendations, I reached out to different people. I said, this is my idea for the year. Do you have any suggestions of good introductions that might be interesting that maybe I haven't come across? So I put together a spreadsheet. And then I categorized the spreadsheet by a theme, meaning some introductions that you'll read in certain svarim are historical. They give you the context of when the person lived and kind of the milieu, the context in which they wrote this particular sefer. Some svarim, the introduction to the sefer, is actually nothing to do with the sefer. It's more about the place of the sefer in the history of learning. Where does it fit in the tradition? Some svarim, the context is halacha of the sefer, but the introduction is musar. It's a chizuk. It's something like that. So I started to categorize different introductions in different clumps. And where we're going to start today is a sefer which actually fuses some of these different elements together. So I'm going to pass around this sefer. Two of these copies are mine. One I had to borrow because I don't have the most recent volume. This sefer is called Shmiras Shabbos Kehilchasa. And what we have to do every week, of course, is figure out what is the sefer when we start, what is the sefer, and why is it important. So to the left, I'm going to pass. This is the first edition of the Shmiras Shabbos. This was published in 1965. This is the second sefer, the second edition of the Shmiras Shabbos. It was published, I think, in 19... I'll tell you in a second exactly when it was published. Says in the front, but I have it written down, 1979, and then I'm holding the third edition. This is the most recent edition of the Shmiras Shabbos Kehilchasa, which was published in 2013. Now, why is this sefer important? Because it is one of the most authoritative volumes, contemporary volumes in Jewish law addressing the laws of Shabbos. The meaning is Shmiras Shabbos, the observance of Shabbos according to its law. Okay. Who wrote this sefer? You open the front cover of the sefer, which you'll see is floating around. Me'es Yehoshua Yeshaya Neuwirth. Yehoshua, Rabbi Yehoshua Neuwirth, and you would say it in English, but Neuwirth in Hebrew. He authored this sefer, originally published in 1965. This sefer, and it's this edition is one. The edition that's going around on the left side is one volume, the early volume. The sefer that's going on the rest is the first of two volumes, this edition. But this sefer is one of the first svarim. I shouldn't say it's the first because I don't know enough to know that it's actually the first. But it's one of the first svarim to take a group of laws, let's say the laws of Shabbos, and instead of organizing them according to the Seder of the Shulchan Aruch, it organizes them just by one big topic. And he organizes it topically. So the first laws, he starts in general about the Isser of Shabbos, but his first section is cooking on Shabbos. Then he talks about Borer separating on Shabbos, and so on and so forth. Whereas, even though the Shulchan Aruch does organize things topically, but it's not quite to the same extent as this Sefer, where if you want to know, you know, can I take the bones out of this particular fish and when and how? You know, in the Shulchan Aruch, you would have to look in a particular siman. Here, you'll look in the chapter that's entitled The Laws of Borer. So it's one of the first compendium, kind of a secondary source that organizes all of the halacha. If you will look in your packets, for those who have packets, I apologize, I didn't make enough for this morning. So I'll hold them up so you can see. I'll also raise the light a little bit so in the back you don't feel like it's a coincidence. Here we go. So just so you can see in the back. So this is the Sharblat, you say in Yiddish, the Sharblat, which is the title page of the 1965 edition. On the right-hand side, it says Halacha Lamaisa, Practical Halacha for the Jewish Home. First Sefer is Shmiras Shabbos Kehilchasa, published in Yerushalayim. Left side of the column, it says it concludes all the dinim of Shmiras HaMitzvos of Shabbos. And then he has a little subsection on mitzvos related to educating children. So that's kind of a secondary thing that he published alongside of it. The second page in the package you'll see, this is the Sharblat of the newest edition, the 2010 edition. This is the expanded version.
Did they come up with more halachas? So
he develops the halachas because, of course, in the course of a lifetime of learning, which we'll talk about in 1 second, who was involved in this, over the course of a lifetime of learning, you're always re-examining and analyzing things new. So what may have been one perspective in the 1960s, he'll come across a new sefer, or he has a new insight or a new perspective in the 1970s or later in the year 2000. So this is the Shaar Blat on page number 2. So this brings us to a barber's point. Go to page number 3. This is, if you look at the inside of the front cover, Iris holding the old version, but you'll also see it in the version that Elaine is holding on the right side. This is the section called the Haskamos. Haskamos, it's not mandatory, but it is traditional that Jewish books, rabbinic literature, Sifrei Kodesh, they come with a little shtempel, you'd say in Yiddish. They come with a little approbation that says, from somebody who is a great, remarkable, distinguished authority, who says, I saw the Sefer and I think that it's important. So the Haskamos of the Sefer already tell you something interesting about the Sefer. First of all, the people who gave the Haskamos on the Sefer are very important. The first Haskamah that appears on the first edition from the 60s is from a man by the name of Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky. He was a British Dayan who was, during the war, recognized as one of the greatest. He was living in London, so he wasn't, I guess you wouldn't say he wasn't affected directly from the Holocaust, but after he survived the Holocaust, being in Britain, he came to Israel. He was one of the most recognized rabbanim of the time. He wrote a set of svarim, most well-known on the Tosefta. So he writes a Haskama. Once one of the greatest rabbinic authorities, Dayan Abramsky, writes a Haskama about the Sefer, so that's already a first statement. But the second page, which you have here on page 3, is a Haskama of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, you see, writes this Haskama Saturday night, Motzoi Shabbos Kodesh, the 25th of Tishrei, means this week, Tav Shin Chaf Dalid, 1953, I think. 63, okay. So he writes here, Rav Shlomo Zalman writes, he says, look, it is so nice for me to write a letter about this Sefer, because I know this man very well. We'll talk about that in a second. He says, I know Rabbi Norworth from a long time, since he was a student in our yeshiva, in a yeshiva called Kol Torah, which still exists today in Bayit Vegan in Yerushalayim. You can go there. So he says, he spent tons of time learning and analyzing the Sefer. And he says, he collected all of these halachos and organized them very beautifully. The second paragraph of Shlomo Zalman writes, "Hein omnam, I couldn't review every single aspect of the Sefer, which is practical and halacha l'maisa, which is very difficult. However, you should know that he spent a ton of time learning and preparing this." That's kind of the beginning of this journey. Then another very interesting haskama, if you go to page 4, you have a haskama for Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein's haskama, it's fascinating, because Rav Moshe writes in this Haskama, you see where he's living? Where's Rav Moshe at this time? Right in the Lower East Side. He originated in Luban, in Russia. He comes, he's writing the Haskama, FDR Drive, New York. He says, I saw the Sefer Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa. He says, it's very praiseworthy. However, not only did Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky give his Haskama on the Sefer, it's a very good Sefer, Avol, since this Sefer has practical advice of how to observe Shabbos, and I, Rav Moshe says, do not give haskamas to psakim that are halacha lemaisa. Why not? Because I would have to agree with everything that it says in the Sefer. I can tell you that if you want to observe Shabbos, you should first learn the Sefer and then figure out how to paskin. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying it's a good Sefer. And then the last haskama here comes from Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg was the author of this Sridi Eish, one of the great Gaonim of Europe, one of the greatest who survived the war. He was the Rosh Hashiva of the Beis Medrash L'Rabbanim in Berlin before the war, before Kristallnacht. He survived the war in a Soviet labor, in a German POW camp for Soviets, which was how he survived, because during the outbreak of the war, he was in Warsaw, but because he had Soviet nationality, Rabbi Weinberg, he was taken by the Germans into the interior of Germany, into a labor camp for Soviets. He was not taken with Jews. So he survived the war in a labor camp. When he survived the war, his His whole world was broken. He had one chief Talmud, a man by the name of Rav Shaul Weingort, who was killed in an accident, and he was completely bereft. So he took a train, he went to Switzerland, he lived in Montreux, and that's where he died. He had a small yeshiva. But people sent him shilas from all over the world. So Rav Norworth, who was in Yerushalayim at this time, sends the manuscript of the Shmir Shabbos to the Gaon, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, who writes, I received his important sefer, Shmir Shabbos Kol Chaso. And I couldn't look at the whole thing. Why? Because of my weakness. Remember, in general, the reason why he was in Warsaw was for health reasons. He had a very poor health, and then after the labor camp, he was very ill health, which is part of the reason that he stayed in Switzerland. He says, I couldn't go through the whole sefer because I'm very sick, but I can tell you that the Rabbanei Hador, especially, fifth line, Mofes Hador, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, they already gave a haskama, and I could just add just my own 2 cents. Roy Sefer Zayetz Chasha, this is an important sefer that everybody should study. And this is not the only haskamas, but you're talking about already, this is like the big leagues of rabbinic haskamas. That's the importance and the weight, the gravity that this sefer is taking on. So that's where we start. A little bit about the sefer, yes.
Are there always that many rabbinical endorsements of it?
You can't say always. There's no such thing as always. There's, you know, there's a variety. There's always a range. It's okay. Thank you. Well, it depends on when you're living and who you are. Now, let's turn the page and talk a little bit about the author of this sefer, Rav Yehoshua Neuwirth. Rav Neuwirth, his father was a Rav in several different communities in Germany before the war. He was born... I can't tell if he was born in 1926 or 1927. Around there, let's say he was born in 1926. His father is a rabbi in the 1930s. He was in several different places in Germany in the 1930s. In 1938, he finds himself as a rabbi in a German Jewish community known as Berlin. So Kristallnacht happens, and the family is able to smuggle this boy, Yehoshua Neuwirth, out to Belgium on a kinder transport. You know, there were approximately 10,000 Jewish children who were rescued through these kinder transports after Kristallnacht going into 1939. So he is sent by his parents to an adoptive family in Belgium, where he observes his bar mitzvah just by himself. His family is able, and there's a long arichas about this, which we're not going to talk about 100% at length. His family is able to actually escape from Germany, and they end up in Amsterdam. They go to Holland. He meets them in Holland. He has a sister. He has a brother. He has a different brother who was studying in yeshiva in France, who was deported to Auschwitz in 1942. But the rest of the family, they go in hiding in Amsterdam. He has one sister who, you'll excuse for saying it, he describes how she doesn't look Jewish. So she's going out and around and finds a contact in the underground, in the resistance, with the Dutch resistance, some of them Jews, some of them just Dutch. And for a long story, he succeeds with his family in staying in a hidden spot in an apartment after all the searches that the Germans did through their building and their neighborhood. They succeeded. No one turned them in. He describes how even there was one particular person who in 1943 was the very severe roundup of the Dutch Jews sending them away. They went first to a transit camp called Westerbork, almost all of them, and then they went either to Auschwitz or Bergen-Belsen. There was, for some reason, they said it was a miracle. The Germans came and knocked. Instead of going door to door in the apartment building, they just knocked on the basement and they yelled, "Any Jews here?" So some guy who was in their building, who was not particularly friendly to them or like Jews, said, "I don't know any Jews in this building." And they left. But he says they could not leave the apartment for 3 years. And he couldn't go to the window because they were afraid that if they went to the window, they would be spotted. The only way they got food, initially the daughter, who looked not Jewish, worked in a non-Jewish house. But interestingly, after a while, they recognized that she had to work on Shabbos, so they told her not to go out anymore. So she stayed home, and the resistance, the underground, got them food and delivered it to them. And they describe how even one Pesach they had potatoes that left at their door, and they had a shtickel flour so that she baked matzahs, and then they gave it back to the underground to send to other people who were in hiding in Amsterdam. It's an unbelievable story. So what you're looking at here on the top of page 5 is Rav Neuwirth's handwritten, this is his personal calendar. Because in their apartment, he had a few Sfarim. And one of them was the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, from which he managed to fashion and write his own Jewish calendar. Because otherwise, how could they keep track of when is Shabbos, when is Yontif? This comes from a very interesting article in the OU's Jewish Action several years ago by a Yad Vashem professor. We don't have time for that today. But anyway, he keeps a calendar and he learns with his father when he's there. They have essentially only a couple Sfarim. They have a Gemara Ksubas, which he learns with his father, and he has a Mishnah Brura, Chelek Gimel. What is the subject of the third volume of the Mishnah Brura? That's right. So that is his companion as a teenager during the war years in hiding. So he finishes the war in Amsterdam in 1946. He travels, a long story, he goes to Marseille in France, and he boards a ship for illegal emigration to Israel. But of course, at that time, Jews are not allowed to emigrate to Israel. So he arrives on the shores in this illegal boat, and where do they put him? Of course, they put him in Atlit, not in Cyprus, in Atlit, in the prison camp. And then ultimately, he gets out of there, and he goes to Kol Torah. He gets to Yerushalayim, and he studies in Yeshivas Kol Torah. In 1949, the late Rosh Yeshiva Rav Schlesinger passes away, and who becomes the new Rosh Yeshiva of Kol Torah? The Gaon, the Tzaddik, the Chassid, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. So here you have this little European refugee Bacher, and then you have this great Yerushalmi, saintly Tzaddik and Gaon. One thing interesting to note, Rav Neuwirth, where do we say he was from? Berlin. He was from Germany. The Kol Torah Yeshiva, the original founders of the Yeshiva, were German Rabbanim. And the lectures in Kol Torah were in Ivrit, which was unusual for an old world Yeshiva, because most of the Yeshivas, what was the language? It was Yiddish. Exactly. So somehow, this Bacharel, this Rav, soon to be Rav Yeshua Neuwirth, connects with Rav Shlomo Zalman. He becomes his Rebbe Muvak. You see on the picture on the left side, on the right hand part of the picture is Rav Shlomo Zalman, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha. On the left side is a picture of Rav Neuwirth, and the bottom is a picture of a modern day Kol Torah. He stays in the yeshiva. He becomes later on a Rebbe in the yeshiva. He founds his own several yeshivas. And then he passes away in the summer of 2013 in Beit Vegan. That is the story of the life of Al Regalachas of Rav Yehoshua Neuwirth. So that is the background. That's the author. So he gives us a hakdama. So go to page 6. And this hakdama is going to have two parts. The hakdama that you see on page 6 is the Mahakdama LeMahadura HaRishona. Mahadura HaRishona means this volume. Sally, could you pass me the top one, please? Thanks. This volume, meaning the original version. I gave you the Xerox from the modern one just because. Oh, it's on the back? Oh, it's stapled wrong. Sorry. So if you see, this is this one that I gave you is from the, because this is the original edition. We would need the optometrist to start working on this. We'll try to blow it up. So I gave you the original ones earlier. But you see, this is the original Hakdama, the original introduction that he wrote to the first edition. This is the original edition. And what he did was he just reprinted it in subsequent editions with a further amplification. So the reason I want to break this down into two parts is because the first part, what we're going to study together, what we're going to learn, is this beginning of this Hakdama before he gives the thank yous to, you know, his mother and the people who helped him publish it, and Rav Shlomo Zalman, of course, and other rabbis. We'll learn the Torah component. But then he expands. In the original edition, he just gives you the Hakdama. In this edition, in the new edition, he adds to the Hakdama and he tells you why he wrote this sefer, which is mamash amazing. So let's start with the original Hakdama on number 6, and we'll go through it line by line. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, Lodas, that we should know, ki ani Hashem mekadishchem. So he quotes a Gemara. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe. God said to Moshe, Matana tova yeshli beveis genazai. I have a good gift. I have a present in my treasure house. The Shabbos Shema. And it's called Shabbos. Va'ani mevakesh litna li Yisrael lech vahudiyam. I want to give it to the Jewish people. Go tell them about it. Right? And by the way, this was before smartphones and email coming from my pants pocket and, you know, the busyness of cars. Imagine what he would say today, what a Matana Shabbos is. Matana Tova. And how it's beautiful. The Gemara learns from this. When you give somebody a gift, make sure they know about it. So they'll feel good. So Hashem wants us to know. We should feel good. He wants us to feel good that He gave us something special. So it's Matana Tova, Yeshli Beveis Genozai. Go tell them. So if a kid comes to your sukkah for a sukkah hap, you should make sure he gets a piece of chocolate. He gets a little bit messy, so his parents will say, oh, it was so nice that they gave you chocolate. That's what the Gemara says. You learn from this. That's what you learn from this. Line number 3. Ein mitzvah b'toras Yisrael. There is no mitzvah. This introduction is so powerful in terms of chizuk for Shmir Shabbos. It's amazing. He says, there's no mitzvah in all the Torah asher tavdil bein am Yisrael l'shar umos k'shabbos zu. Nothing distinguishes us more than the outside world than the observance of Shabbos. I was talking to somebody in the parking lot on Simchas Torah, someone in our community who works very hard. He works all the time. So I asked him, how is it, because Yontov and Shabbos, you know, every other day, the people in his office, they can't figure out what's coming. So he says, what the people don't understand is that I'm really inaccessible. He says, they don't cop that, because whenever I'm on vacation, but of course I'm really available. I can answer emails, I can answer this emergency. But he says to me, what they don't understand is that today I'm actually not accessible. That's what differentiates this day than any other vacation. There's no such thing as being, you know, accessible in case of absolute emergency in the office. It's just not. They understand, he said to me. He says, it's different. So he says, this distinguishes us. Shabbos is sanctified by God. Line number 5. Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, shenutak me'ad maso b'meshach alpaim shana, that the Jewish people were uprooted from their land 2,000 years ago and are scattered v'chai mefuzer ben agoyim kaseovi, like a wandering sheep. We did not lose our connection to this letter of strength and beauty. One more editorial note. I'm going to keep throwing these in. I hope it doesn't stare the conversation. But this book, if you ask anybody, what is the nature of the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa, they tell you it's dry, it's technical, it's legal, but you give the author a chance to open his heart and his soul. He's waxing poetic here. I can't even translate adequately into English what he's really trying to say about what it means for Jews to observe Shabbos in the exile and still stay connected to something when they're in the far-flung corners of the universe. So he's not just a legal scholar. Davaku nishar b'toras Moshe's emes shekibol mehar Sinai uba matana tova sheba ashar Shabbos Shema. Zu, line number 7. Zui sheshamra al achdus am Yisrael. This is what watched over the sanctity of the Jewish people. You know, there's a famous idiom, more than the Jews watched over the Shabbos, the Shabbos watched over the Jews. Anywhere in the world, people are observing Shabbos. K'ma'amar Chazal ki kodesh ulochem magid shahshabbos mosefes kedusha. On line number 8, kedusha al Yisrael. So he says, here's a conversation that goes on. Malaploni shechanuso neula. Why is this guy has his shop is closed? Why is the store closed? Well, because it's Shabbos. Why malaploni? Line number 9. Batal mimalachto. Why is he sitting home? The Medrash says. People would stop by the Shabbos and say, why is it closed? The answer is because it's Shabbos. This gives us an identity, he says. Tzivyona, line number 10. Ubamakir Yehudi says something amazing. Shu Aver Beguf Shalem. When a person observes Shabbos, when they close their store, when they shut their email on Erev Shabbos in Skokie, they recognize that they're part of a Shmira Shabbos of all Jews everywhere, all over the world. So it gives us a connection to other people. You know, a person could be traveling somewhere, especially today, you know, thanks, they have Chabad, other things. You could be traveling anywhere. Everybody would know. You're looking for a place. What are you looking for a place for? Nobody's worried about Tuesday night dinner. You can eat tuna fish. Where are you going to connect to Jews? When are you going to find Jews? Right? On Shabbos. We're going to find people on Shabbos. We're connected on Shabbos. So he says, line number 12. Ra Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Hashalom. Moshe Rabbeinu saw O B'mei Shiba Mitzrayim, and that's why in the davening it says Yismach Moshe B'matnas Chelko. Moshe figured out She Yisrael Lo Yuchlu LaHachzik Ma'amad Ke'uma. It's not that the Jews couldn't survive the backbreaking labor of Egypt if they didn't have a day of vacation. It's that they would have lost their identity if they didn't have something that glued them together. Ella Im Kain. Koach Elyon Yitzarfam Yachad. There was some overarching spiritual energy that will make all the Jews together already in Egypt. Yicheid Osam Mishchaneim HaMitzriyim. It would distinguish them from their Egyptian neighbors. And what does he do? So there is a Shmos Rabbi quotes that Moshe went to Paro and he says, Pharaoh, the Jews need a day off of work. So Pharaoh says, what is this? He says, because if you don't give them one day to rest, they're not going to have enough energy to sustain themselves the rest of the week. So that's the tradition, according to the Medrash, of the actual origins of Shabbos before it was given. So what is Rav Neuwirth trying to say? He's saying what Moshe Rabbeinu was giving them was not a day off, was a secret code way to maintain their identity. When you see another person who's walking to shul in the morning, you just give them the look. Huh? You're going to late, minion. You're really late. Like, just that. And then they look down. You just have that connection, right? That's the experience of Shabbos that Moshe Rabbeinu gave them in Egypt. Everybody woke up in the morning on Shabbos in Egypt, and they looked outside. They saw the Egyptians working, and the Jews saw each other. They went for coffee, they davened, whatever. Line number 15 at the end. Sheyedu, that they should know, ki uma miyuchedesheim, line 16. They should know they're a special people. Uma, they are a nation, shechaya ba tikvas pakod yivkod elokim eschem, that lives with the hope that one day God will redeem them. Uma shel pakod pakarati eschem, uma asher ishtasha b'shabbos b'megilas asher b'yodam lomar shakadosh baruch hu go'olam. It held on to ha tikva, the hope that they will be redeemed by Hashem, will take them out one day from Egypt. So that was the original vision. So what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu recognizes that to save our Jewish identity among non-Jews, Shabbos is critical. So we institute Shabbos. Line number 20. So what does he do? We leave Egypt. Vayakil Moshe es kol hadas b'nei Yisrael. So when we learn the laws of Shabbos, it appears in the beginning of Parshas, Vayakil. Why Parshas Vayakil? What does the word Vayakil mean? Right, and he gathered with a specific connotation of kahal. What is a kahal? Right, a congregation where people belong. We all belong now to something. So the Medrash says, Amru Chazal, number 20, line 21, Mi Bereishis, from the beginning of the Torah, Ad La'enei Kol Yisrael, until the end, Lo Timtza Parsha Shenemra Ba'loshon Vayakel, Elazos Bilvad. You won't find a single portion in the Torah where it says Vayakel, except for Shabbos. Amazing. Says the Medrash, Omer lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, God said to Moshe, Asei lecha kihilos, make kihilos, make congregations, get people together, Udrosh bifneim barabim hilchos Shabbos, and teach them publicly the laws of Shabbos. Kedesh yilmadu mimcha doros habayim, so that future generations should learn lahakil kilos b'chol Shabbos v'Shabbos, to get everybody together on Shabbos. V'lehikonis l'beis medrash l'lamed or l'lmot u'lahorus l'b'nei Yisrael divrei Torah iser v'heter. To get people together on shul, that they should have a shir, they should have a drasha, they should have learning. So that God's name should be sanctified. So that everybody should come to Shul Shabbos morning and daven together and learn together. This is already embedded in the original Parshas Vayakal that Moshe gave them. Amazing. But it's a challenge. You see how thick this book is? Our kolo, last year we learned Hilchos Shabbos in the afternoon in Halacha Seder. It's the fourth time that we learned Shabbos in the last 11 years, because we cycle through it every couple of years, because we want to make sure that anybody who gets through the Kolol cycle has a chance to learn Shabbos in depth. We haven't touched even a significant minority of this Sefer, because the laws of Shabbos are so vast and so complex. So it's a big challenge, on the other hand. Because on the one hand, it's a great matana. On the other hand, it's an overwhelming task. And that's why, on line 26, he says, "Mistaber ki echra tamim shedavka mitzvah Shabbos." It seems to me that specifically the mitzvah of Shabbos, al kol prahatel, through all of its details, nishkachas me'enei ha'am, has been forgotten. Many of the laws are not learned. People don't know the laws. There, the Gemara says, they are like a mountain held by a hair. If you open a Chumash, it tells you exactly how they built the Mishkan. A lot of details. If you open a Chumash, does it tell you how to observe Shabbos? Nothing. Right? Imagine you had somebody who came from the outside, who didn't know anything about the Jewish religion at all. And he said, well, I heard there's something called Sabbath. I was listening to a podcast on the BBC, and Rabbi Jonathan Sachs got on there, and he told us that there's something called Shabbos, and that's why everybody turns off their communication. So I want to observe Shabbos. So I went to the library, and I got a Bible. And I looked in there, and it doesn't tell me what to do. So it's a big challenge. He says, that's one big problem. Mikra muat, there's very little in the psukim. I'm on line 27. The halachos merubos, and there are lots of laws, and not only that, va'onshea chamurim, and the seriousness, the gravity, is big time. A person who observes Shabbos, so they're tapping into all of this incredible energy of Shabbos, the spirit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the connection to the Jewish people, the way to keep us glued together in the Golos. But a person who does not observe Shabbos is shattering that. Rachman al Islam. This is very serious. So this is a big challenge. It's such a big challenge, he quotes the Gemara on the second to last line here, on line 28, that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, two of arguably the greatest sages of the Talmudic period, Shahayu Oskim Beperek said, they were learning the halachos of Shabbos for how long? What's the last line say? How long did Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish have to learn Hilchos Shabbos for? 3 years. That means uninterrupted, non-stop study for 3 years for two of the greatest sages to master all of Hilchos Shabbos. Top of the next column. V'chein mavur b'sifra. That's what it says in the Medrash. Zachris yom ha-Shabbos l'kadosho. Remember Shabbos to sanctify it, which according to the simple halachic interpretation means celebrate it by reciting the declaration of Kiddush. But they take it to a deeper level. Yachol b'libcha. Maybe you'll just remember Shabbos in your heart. You'll think about Shabbos. Kishu omer shamor. That, second line 31, hushmira saliv amura. It's not just enough to remember it in your heart, because when you say shamor, hold on to it, guard it, that's in your heart, says the Medrash. Shamor is in your heart. So what is zachor? How do I remember Zachor? How do I fulfill that? That you should learn it. You should constantly be learning the laws of Shabbos. That's what it means. Lizkor Shabbos. Because the word Lizkor means Lahazkir. 32, line 32. Kvar Kos of Rabbeinu Yonah. And Rabbeinu Yonah of Girona, one of the great Rishonim, you're talking 13th century in Spain. Bishifro Shari Tshuva says, you know what's one of the sweetest things for rabbis, for guides, for teachers? You know what they should do? Lahazir ulahaid ba'am alayim, to teach people about velishmor orchos paritz b'mitzvot Shabbos. One of the most important things for rabbis is to teach the laws of Shabbos. Because it is this incredible bond between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's incredibly complex. So we need to invest time in it. You can see, by the way, where he's going with this introduction. This is the pitch to say, there we go, read my book. Right? You better get to know this inside and out. Al odos avos malachos vitoldos. Ki rabos mehenu nelmu me'eni rabim. Many of them are forgotten and lost on people. Af ein magid af mashpia. He says also, Rabbeinu Yonah writes, and this is interesting, he's writing this 800 years ago. He's saying, you know what? A lot of the rabbis are not talking about Shabbos enough. He says, we got to put a bigger focus on Shabbos observance. And the truth is, it actually makes a lot of sense. Why? It comes every week. It's one of the most important Jewish principles, foundational principles. A person who's a Mechal Shabbos Befarhesia loses their privileges in the Jewish community. Again, today we are very hard-pressed to find somebody who would be qualified in the status of a wanton Shabbos desecrator. I haven't met anybody yet in my lifetime who is a wanton Shabbos desecrator. Most people who we know who are not Shabbos observant, we would say are not Shabbos educated. They didn't grow up with an understanding of Shabbos. No one ever afforded them that opportunity to understand it and to experience it. But a person who, God forbid, did know and decided that they are deliberately violating Shabbos, that's a very serious thing.
How about the early leaders of conservative reform who came from Orthodox backgrounds?
So that's a good question. So maybe over the last 200 years, you might be able to find a minion of good, old-fashioned Mechale Shabbos Befrahesia. Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I can't speak to that because I didn't know them personally. There's specific circumstances. You have to take it on a case-by-case basis. Most of the non-observant people who I know, they didn't have the beauty of Shabbos. They didn't have it. So, you know, we have to, part of one of the things that we do is when we invite people for Shabbos and when we introduce people to the experience of Shabbos, they're having it for the first time. Yeah. So the only way for somebody to be classified halachically as a Mechal Shabbos Befarhesia means they have to understand what Shabbos is, they have to appreciate and apprehend the meaning of Shabbos, the significance of Shabbos, what the laws of Shabbos are, what it entails, where it comes from, and they have to say, nonetheless, I hate Shabbos, I hate God, and I'm going deliberately to violate Shabbos. I haven't met too many people like that. I haven't met anybody like that yet. Yeah, George.
There are those who love Shabbos that are not observant and have learned, but they, you know, migrated away. But they keep Shabbos in their way.
Ah, very good. So the Gemara in Erevin, so George is raising a question, which I don't want to get too far off topic, but this is an important topic, because the Gemara says there's something called Nechal Shabbos Bifarhesia. What does Bifarhesia mean? Openly, wantonly. So Gemara in Erevin says, well, what if somebody, to give a modern day equivalent, what if they park the car around the corner? Why do they park the car around the corner? Why?
So no one will see them.
So why? Because they have a shtickle. They know it's not right, but they're not holding by that yet. They know, and they're embarrassed. So Gemara says, that's not the Mechal Shabbos for Hesia. I used to lane in a certain shul, a beloved shul that I still think of so fondly, in a certain community in a suburb of New York when I was in college. So I used to lane there, and that I was some money in my pocket. So I used to joke in that shul that Purim was a special holiday. They used to call it pull it in. Pull it in! Pull it in! No problem. Driveway is open, pull it in. Because other days, you know, they're not going to say. So that's not a Mechal Shabbos Befarhesia. Somebody who feels ashamed to break the Shabbos publicly. One of my favorite stories about Rabbi Ari Levin, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha. His name was the Tzadik of Yerushalayim. So he used to go to visit the prisoners, the Jewish political prisoners, If you ever have a chance to go to see the Palestine prison in the Russian compound, Yerushalayim, it's incredible. So they have a whole room devoted to Rabbi Aryeh Levin. So in the biography, in the story biography by Simcha Raz, they describe there was once a man who was in the prison, the Jewish political prison, of course, and he was totally chiloni, completely secular. So he was smoking on Shabbos, because Shabbos is not, you know, not any different than any other day. He was a chiloni man. But he saw out of the corner of his eye, Rabbi Aryeh Levin was coming into the prison, walking down the hall. And he was so ashamed, he was so embarrassed that the tzaddik Rabbi Aryeh should see him smoking a cigarette on Shabbos.
He swallowed it.
He swallowed it right then and there, because he couldn't get rid of it fast enough. That's not a machal b'Shabbos for Farhesu. That's the Pintel Yid who has a tzaddik inside who hasn't yet been shown the way how to express his Shabbos. So that's what we're going to hold it here. We can talk about it further afterwards because I don't want to lose completely. But he finishes quoting a piece from Rav Yonasan Abishitz in the Yaros Devash. Something line 35 where he gets very serious. He quotes in the Heiliger Rav Yonasan Abishitz. 18th century, Germany. This sentence scares me because I can honestly say I have not yet adequately, thoroughly learned all of Hilchos Shabbos twice or three times. Lo yachol li molet, will not be able to avoid shelo yikro lo chilo Shabbos hein doraisa hein drabanan. And umin aroy lo mor Hilchos Shabbos mitmidus. We should constantly be learning Hilchos Shabbos. Which, by the way, one should not be confused as saying, well, if I can't learn everything, well, I shouldn't learn anything. You know, it's like somebody coming to you and saying, well, would you like to invest some money in a retirement account? So they say to you, well, am I going to be Warren Buffett at the end? They say, no. So I say, forget it. Why should I bother investing? I'll put the money under my pillow. That's foolish. Because if you can earn 5%, 5% is better than sitting under the mattress. So whatever we can learn in Hilchos Shabbos is good. Doesn't mean that we have to all, you know, at the end of our life, be the author of the Sefer Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa. So this concludes this part of the introduction. And then he talks about how it's not Chidushim, it's just a collection. So we started talking about the beauty of Shabbos and the impact of Shabbos and what Shabbos means on a national and a historic level. And then, on the second hand, he talks about the importance of studying the laws of Shabbos. So by the time you finish this introduction, you're thinking, you know what? This is a book that I should get. It's also available in English. It's a very important work. So far, so good. But now we come to the new introduction to answer the question, why did he write Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa? Turn the page to page 7. Remember, what was he learning hiding in Amsterdam during the war? Mishnah Berurah Chelek Gimel. What was so important to their family, the observance of Shabbos, that the daughter didn't even work, had to give up the work to stay home so that she shouldn't avoid breaking the Shabbos? So he describes, Nisharti be'Amsterdam. After the liberation, you see where it's section A on the bottom right on page 7. I stayed in Amsterdam. But my hope was to get to Israel. In the spring of Tufshin Vav, hit Argana Kvutzat Olim Bilti Ligalim. A group of illegal Olim organized themselves. The borders were still closed because of the aftermath of the war. And we tried. Ne'elatznu, we were forced, third line, la'avorosam b'masve shel chayalim amerikanim levushim b'madim shalahem. So we dressed up as GIs with American Army uniforms to cross the border. And that's how we got the border until after several long weeks, we got to Marseille in Tsarfat. Fourth line. When the ship arrived to go to the land of Israel, you can imagine what that must have felt like after weeks of smuggling themselves to Marseille, after 3 years of living in hiding, after years of being on a kinder transport and running away from the Nazis. Horulanu la'alos alea b'Shabbos. They told us to get on the boat on Shabbos. Hadavar tzier osi b'miuchad. It caused me particular grief and anguish. Hari kol shnos hamilchama kasha. The whole time during this difficult period of the war, hitzlachnu lishmor mitzvos ad kama she'efshar, we succeeded in mitzvos to the best of our ability. Ubimiyuchad Shabbos Kodesh. Eich yitachein, how is it possible? Sha'achshav, that now, im hacherus, with liberation, now I'm going to have to violate Shabbos. Alay lachal Shabbos. Matzavi haya agum. My situation was very depressed. Vahayanira be'enai kisakonas nefashos. But it seemed to me as a matter of life and death. Because liyishaer b'makom zar, to stay in France, in Marseille, in a strange place, b'li kesef, no money, b'li ochel, no food, b'li kol rechush, surviving teenager running with nothing on his back, ein la'an l'leches, no place to go. Ne'elatzti b'leiz reir la'alos al ho'oniya, I had to go on the ship. Aval ha'davar charat et rishumo alai b'meshech shanim rabos. But that experience, it, charat literally means to tattoo, to dig into me, into my personality. It left such a strong impression. Ubiyoser shalachar zman, and more after I saw after a while, she'ein ze elamaisa shal tarmish shal mechal leShabbos. It was actually just a trick by the non-religious people to get us to get on the boat on Shabbos. It wasn't even necessary. Skip ahead. Next column, the little b. Last paragraph. Ka'asher ne'elatzti la'alos alaho oniya. When I was forced to get on the boat, ulehistabech b'chilo Shabbos, and to get mixed up in the chilo Shabbos, biglal mipnei ha'chashash l'pikuach nefesh, because of the concern of pikuach nefesh, he didn't have a breira. Kibalti al atzmi. I accepted something upon myself. Sha'akadosh Baruch Hu yizake osi, that God should give me the merit, ve'eseh mashu avur ha'shabbos. I'll do something for Shabbos. V'kach ola ha'ra'ayon, and that was the source of the idea, lechtov sefer al shmira Shabbos, to write a book about the sanctity of Shabbos. After my first son was born, Samti Lev, I paid attention. She'ain Sefer, there is no book. Ha'osif b'sofo es hilchos Shabbos b'sofa ha'shava l'chol nefesh. There is no book that is in the common man's language that collects all the laws of Shabbos. You have to be a scholar to learn hilchos Shabbos, not the everyday person. B'kedei la'anos ala she'ilos harabos, to answer the many questions, hamis oros b'chol Shabbos, that come up every Shabbos. V'oz hischalti b'sivaso shel ha'sefer. And that's when I started to write this book. So this story has many layers. It's a story about Shabbos. It's also a story about failure. Because this was a man who held on to Shabbos for so long, and yet then failed at the observance of Shabbos just when he was freed. So you might think that the failure would break him and say, oh, you see, Shabbos is not my thing. What does he do? He takes that failure and he translates it into something which has literally transformed worldwide existence of Shabbos. You cannot go to any legitimate presentation on Hilchos Shabbos where the presenter has not reviewed the pertinent halachos in Hilchos Shabbos in the Shmiras Shabbos Kelchasa. And it comes from a failure. It comes from a man who wasn't able to observe Shabbos. So there's a separate lamaisa takeaway from this story about what it means when we make mistakes and what we aren't able to stand up and hold up to our standards that we want to for ourselves. That's one story. But the other is, now when you read this sefer, what's going into it? What does it mean to be part of this Masorah? That when we learn this Sefer, we are connecting to a man who I never met in person. Halach la'olamo, he's passed away already now 5 years. But the connection to the Sefer connects us to a teenage boy learning Mishneh Berurah Chelek Gimel in a hiding place in Amsterdam so that the Germans shouldn't find him. That connects him to the previous Sfarim that he's going to quote. And v'chahena v'chahena. These kinds of understanding, these experiences, they can change our appreciation of Shabbos, our appreciation of Yiddishkeit, and the gift that we have, the opportunity that we have to learn these Sfarim. So halavai, this should be the first of many opportunities that we have just to open the Hakdama, and we'll continue, please God, next week. Thank you all for coming. Have a great day.